With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. Once again, this is Moose Rokwonga, and I'm joined again by Ryan Hun and Michael Da Silva. And this week we're going to discuss teams and players who are in the groove, players for whom it is clicking, teams for whom it is clicking, and some of those for whom it is not. Ryan, Michael, welcome back.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going? How's it going?
It's going.
For me, not so good.
Oh dear. Well, that's a disappointed Spurs fan for you. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
You're chipper.
Steady away.
You're chipper. Well, you're an Arsenal fan, so understandable. Let's just leap in. This is the theme, in the groove. Who's in the groove this week? Who's not?
Well, Liverpool are in the groove, aren't they? I mean, they're proving that they are capable, I think, of pushing City quite far this year. Whether that's far enough to win the title remains to be seen, but there's something different about them this year, I think. Got a bit more grit, a bit more steel about them. Their midfield were just, they were fighting for 90 minutes.
Right.
And they were prepared to get their hands dirty, which is a side of them we haven't always seen. But yeah, they look good.
It's funny because Liverpool, they've been the masters of the fifth gear for so many years, right? You know, Liverpool could blow you away 4 goals in half an hour. And now they're like the masters of the third gear, where Liverpool in third gear are better than most people's fourth or fifth. Mm. And they've just got this really fantastic, I think, match control, don't they? They're just so solid throughout the team.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that occurred to me, because I was at Wembley on Saturday, unfortunately. And, you know, when Harry Kane is not playing well, Spurs find it difficult to win.
Right.
When Mo Salah is not playing well, and he didn't have a great game on Saturday, Liverpool still are able to win. And I think that's the difference between where those two teams are.
Right.
And why Liverpool are, as you say, kind of going through the gears, you know?
But isn't something about intensity as well? Because Kane doesn't just bring goal scoring. He brings that incredible energy. Like, he leads, he sets the tone. And I think you look at Liverpool, and, you know, you're a big Joe Gomez fan. You've been mentioning before, and they have that intensity, don't they, throughout the side.
Mm.
And they're a team that supplies intensity. They've got leaders, really, I know, the cliche, all over the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, that midfield, Keita, Milner is a new player, Wijnaldum as well. Wijnaldum scored his first away goal ever in the Premier League, by the way. 3 years.
Great stat, that.
Yeah. I think he scored quite a few at home.
Yeah, all his goals have been at home, obviously.
And this one only just creeped over the line, But yeah, about that midfield, they're prepared to just really fight, and there were big tackles going in. And it's not really what you associate with Klopp's teams. And I saw a real different side to them. And they should have won that game. But if they'd won 4-0 in 5-0, there'd be no complaints. They were so dominant at the crucial times.
For me, I think the biggest sign is just comparing the two fixtures from last season to this season. You know, Spurs kind of really blew them away last season in the same fixture. It was 4-1, right? I think at Wembley last season.
It was 4-1, yeah.
And this season, I mean, Spurs had more of the ball, more possession, and yet Liverpool, I think, had far more chances on goal, which is exactly what we kind of said a couple of weeks ago, I think, where Liverpool are most dangerous when they don't have the ball. Mm. And I think Spurs had something like 60% possession. Liverpool had 40.
Mm.
And yet Liverpool had 17 shots, 10 on target.
Yeah.
And Spurs had a lot less.
Can I just say, this is the thing with Spurs, because it was commented before that they didn't make a new signing. And I don't think it's about buying players for the sake of buying players, but there's something to be said for freshening up a squad, maybe.
Well, this is exactly my point. Well, on the first one of the season we did, it was, for me, in the last few years, they've been consistently the best team, I think, Spurs, as a whole. They should have won the league the year that Leicester won the league. Arguably should have, not should have, but definitely could have in another one of the seasons. Maybe, was it the year Chelsea won the league with under Conte?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, the table doesn't lie, to use a huge cliche, but if you were going to pick the best balanced, most consistent team over those 2 years, I would have said Spurs. And sorry, just before you, but and that was basically my only concern for Spurs this season, wasn't that quality throughout the starting 11 or with Pochettino as a coach. It was to throw in a basketball reference, is using the Warriors thing. They don't need to sign new players, but they do it to freshen up the roster,
right,
to just create something a little bit different to stop it going stale.
You know, I was at Jurgen Klopp's first game as Liverpool coach, which was also away at Spurs, 0-0, October 2015. And at that point, Pochettino had been in charge of Spurs for a year and a bit. And there was a sense that Spurs were just starting to adjust to his methods, and they were just beginning to become the team that they've become under him. But Jurgen Klopp has had a year and a bit less to make Liverpool into Champions League finalists and contenders for the Premier League. And it just shows you that signing players, the right players at the right time, makes a big difference. Spurs don't have the same resources that Liverpool do. But Liverpool have very much overtaken Spurs. And Spurs, for me, they've missed those opportunities that you mentioned to win the league. And now this is Liverpool's moment. Spurs are in regression.
Yeah, I think, maybe. I mean, I think it's a little bit I would think it's a little bit too soon to kind of make that much of a call that they're going backwards. But I think that, not wanting to go too far outside of the game from Saturday, but I think the stadium thing came at a really bad time for Spurs, I think, where they could have done with as much investment in that squad or money available as possible.
Yeah.
You see a lot recently where a lot of players have come to the Premier League and gone to London as opposed to going to potentially bigger or better sides further north.
Mm.
And I think that if Spurs had had the money available to go and buy some of the people who they would have been in for, that Liverpool were also in for in the last couple of years, that could have propelled them to like another level. I mean, it's all shoulda, woulda, coulda, but...
Just to be clear, though, when I say regression, I mean in comparison with those other teams that have taken big steps forward.
Yeah, sure.
So they're more kind of just running on the spot. Yeah. But yeah, you're right about those signings. You look at Naby Keita, what he would do for the Spurs midfield, Kovacic at Chelsea.
Mo Salah was someone I could imagine being a Spurs signing at the time, especially he wasn't the most Salah that he was now.
Absolutely. We shouldn't focus too much on Spurs because I don't want to, but also because Liverpool were, they were a completely different team to the one that lost 4-1 a year ago. And they were, for me, this is further proof that they're going to push City all the way.
Yeah, I wrote something on Twitter after the game where it was just, this is the first time I can remember for a long time that they look absolutely the real deal.
Mm.
You know, there is no mega weakness really anymore.
Van Dijk, by the way, was amazing.
Yeah, colossal.
Joe Gomez, I like. There's a little of Rafael Varane about him, I think. Perhaps a slightly eager comparison, but the two read the game in a similar way. They don't like to dive in unless they really have to, and when they do, they can make that big challenge and save their team. Gomez has got a long way to go, but I do see those kind of signs. I wouldn't be surprised if Gomez has been studying Varane, because I see similarities.
The technique is there, the power, the resilience, and that's what I like about the Liverpool centre-backs. These are players that can mix it up. They can have a physical, aggressive game if they have to, but they can also play on the front foot. And, you know, the key to Liverpool's style is getting the ball as quickly as possible through the heart of the pitch. And that's the thing I like about Liverpool as well. They attack through the middle. If you look at the Man City action, Liverpool have sort of, these are sort of very reductive comparisons. City this year are using width, and Liverpool almost by comparison using almost the crossbow approach. You know, when they counterattack, it's like down the middle. Sadio Mane has it, then lays it off. Naby Keita is bombing on almost as a kind of wide forward in, those, in those configurations. It's very bold what they're both doing.
There are ways to get around Liverpool though, and the Spurs didn't have much joy in that game, but Lucas Moura, I think, was the only player that can come out with any credit. And he hit the post, and that whole opportunity came about because there was a long ball. Moura was, I mean, I was sitting behind the goal, so I could kind of appreciate a bit more the width of the play. And Moura was kind of hugging the touchline. And Alderweireld, Dier were often looking for him with long, accurate, early balls. I think crucial thing is to catch them early and don't give Liverpool an opportunity to organise. And it sounds simple, just hit it over the top. But Liverpool are kind of team that if you give them that opportunity to get into place, they will... they will bring in the press, and it will be very difficult to beat them at their own game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one major trait throughout Klopp's Dortmund teams, and you know, now he's got that going with Liverpool, is just how relentless they are when you have the ball.
Yeah.
And it's, and as soon as you lose the ball high up the pitch, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a couple of times yesterday where, I mean, realistically, you know, Liverpool should have been out of sight at half time. And in the second half as well, there was another couple of opportunities where they really, really should have put Spurs away. There was that one chance where I think Mane, Salah and Keita were breaking forward, and Mane held onto the ball just a little too long, kind of killed Keita's run, delayed the pass. And, you know, if that gets released early, it's a much better chance.
Actually, talking of players that segue, that do lead the counterattack exceptionally well, Eden Hazard. And there is a player... And this is a team, Chelsea, you know, now this is a team in the groove. Really great to see Olivier Giroud looking so good. Great to see Willian have another great game, but that's Willian, so he just does what he does. Pedro is resurgent. Sarri has so much to be thanked for by Chelsea fans, I think, and they just look terrific.
They do. Hazard's a class act. I think Chelsea are quietly putting together a title challenge.
Yep.
I think it's unbelievable in some ways that Chelsea are able to just recycle. They can get rid of a coach and the next season just become contenders again. I mean, it's probably too early to call them contenders, but look how good they look.
It's just great headhunting. It's great recruitment. Now, I look at Chelsea and I think to myself, that is basically like one of those blue chip, you know, headhunting firms where they, you know, they search for a CEO for like 3 years and they've got like a short list of people and they're like, okay, it's got to be Sarri this time. And they've brought him in and he's directly aligned, like his philosophy and what he wants to do, the foot wants to play, the way he liberates his players is directly aligned with the players in his squad. And they're just playing, I mean, terrific stuff. And I have to give Giroud credit here because he is someone who's been much maligned by a lot of people, but his ability to lead the line for Coventry Country, the combination with Hazard for Hazard's first goal, beautiful move, dummy from Hazard, spins off, receives the return pass, rides a challenge in exceptional fashion. The dummy he throws on the last defender. The defender's still looking for him. And then rolls it home. And that's Giroud. That's why he's the point man for France.
Yeah.
I mean, this is turning into a weekly Giroud, Mensch.
And Matuidi, sorry. Giroud, no, Matuidi.
Now it's time for our Giroud and Matuidi section. But yeah, I mean, it's just what he always has been like Giroud. I think we mentioned last week or the week before that if players like Hazard, players who like to like run beyond the striker, he's a perfect striker for those kind of players because he's really, really good at link-up play. He's not particularly selfish. Right. And he's really, really good at bringing other people into play. And players like Hazard, so often in teams, the number nine can be the main guy. And actually, when you have someone like Hazard, who is clearly the main guy at Chelsea, having Giroud as the nine just means you can just maximize. I think sometimes for me last season, a lot of Chelsea's problems going forward came from Morata and Hazard not really gelling as much as you'd like them to. And I think you've seen the season, Hazard's kind of exploded already at the beginning of the season. And he's just been unbelievable.
He's been unbelievable for several years.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got Real Madrid seem to come in for him every year. And every year they get rebuffed. And I think Eden Hazard genuinely loves it in London. Mm. He's very happy at Chelsea, and the player and the club are a perfect fit, I think.
He had a bit of a, was it, he had a poor goal scoring season. Was it last season?
It was a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
he was
it might have been the season before.
But since then, I mean, he's just, I mean, he came on against Arsenal in the second game of the season and just changed the game, like completely changed the game. And you know, when you see like Messi and he's so clearly toying with a lot of the opposition because he just can, you know, Hazard has that to his game.
I want to talk about, not to be Mr. Negative, but I want to talk about teams it's not quite clicking for, because Chelsea, you know, the Chelsea machine is just up and running, but the Atletico Madrid machine is really creaking along and is in trouble. I mean, they had a 1-1 draw, didn't they, at the weekend?
Yeah, and they were lucky as well. I mean, well, lucky, they had a lot of chances, but they weren't clear cut. And Eibar went 1-0 up, I think it was the 87th minute or right, something. Yeah. And yeah, Atleti got out of jail with a 94th minute. It was literally pretty much the last kick of the game.
It was a great goal, though.
It was a really good goal, yeah. Borja, the young.
What's going on there? Because they've bought Lamar. Griezmann literally made a big song and dance about staying. He's always, you know, doing more dancing than scoring at the moment, Griezmann. He looked rusty and off the pace.
But we're seeing this with a few players, like a World Cup hangover, you know? And I think it might take some time for some of the guys that played in those latter stages of the tournament to get their breath back a little bit. I mean, I just to go back to Spurs for a second, I think Harry Kane should be dropped for his own good. I think he's played so much football in the last year, and you could say the same for Griezmann. I mean, you know, how many games did Atletico play last season to get to the final of the Europa League, both Spanish competitions, League and Cup, getting to the World Cup final? I mean, this guy's clocked up.
Are we not being a bit generous
to him?
I mean, Harry Kane, I would, to be euphemistic, maybe rotated for his own good or rested. But look at Atletico Madrid. Diego Costa missed a really, really presentable opportunity.
Hmm.
He did, and we forget, they started the season well. They had that great win in the Super Cup. But is there something about the fact that key parts of the Madrid Atletico machine are showing signs of wear and tear? So Godin is not his normal commanding self. It's taken a while. It will take a while to integrate Thomas Lamar into the setup. Perhaps that's part of it. But also maybe there's a sense in which people have worked out how to play against Atletico Madrid. I don't know.
To an extent, but I don't really worry about Atletico, because how long has Simeone been there now? A good few years.
Is it nine years, 8 years?
That long?
I think so. It's been quite a while.
And he has this knack of regenerating the team, you know? And that's probably, you know, you look at the great coaches, Alex Ferguson, I mean, that's what made him so successful, that he was able to regenerate that team, you know, year after year, lose important players and replace them. Not like for like, but continue to be effective. Mm. And I think these are teething problems for Atletico, but I can see them hitting their stride quite soon.
So this is eighth season.
Eighth season. Mm. That, you know, can I say this actually? That's a remarkable, I just want to give credit to that club for having faith in him, in their recruitment. And then, you know, we talk about a lot of clubs as being projects, and that's a horrible expression. But
yeah,
look, this is a club that has got a new stadium. It's held on to its best players. Mm. And actually, to be fair to them, I did see chances missed on that day that would otherwise have gone in. And if they go 1-0, 2-0 up, then it's a different game.
But they've lost a lot of big players as well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, even going all the way back to Aguero.
Forlan. They sold arguably the best striker in Europe 3 years straight.
Mm.
And they got better each year.
Mm. I mean, yeah, testament to the coach.
So can I just say, let's not write you off. This is, whoever's listening to this podcast, we're not writing you off.
Yeah, I mean, it's, they're only four games in, you know, and I think that the only worrying thing for Atleti, I think, is that, well, I mean, we did a podcast just after the Super Cup and we were like, they look really good.
Right.
And they've added genuine flair with Lamar. And if they can build on that robust defensive attitude and how intense they are, and then add a kind of element of attacking flair to that, they'd be really scary. Unfortunately, we've not seen that yet this season.
Mm.
Can we just go across the city then, across Madrid, and just talk about Real for a moment? Because they've again sort of stuttered into this season. They had a draw against Bilbao, which is actually, it's no shame. I mean, you draw away to Bilbao, it's not a bad result.
Well, San Mamés is a hard place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty brutal.
It was a great game, that. There's a lot of good games this weekend, actually.
Can I say, you know, West Ham? West Ham, welcome back. Glad to see you winning.
Yarmolenko, I told you.
Right, I have a thing about Yarmolenko, and it's not football related, but he wears football shirts that are way too big for him. Like, have you noticed? There's in this era of, you know, tight fitting shirts, he looks like he's got his, you know, when you kind of play just for a Sunday league team and they're all XL.
Yeah.
He's got that going on.
It's like a painter wearing a smock. You know, like those, you know, like early Depardieu movies when he's sort of sitting in the French countryside with like a glass of wine and there's a smock. You can imagine Pirlo wearing a kind of one of those on his off day.
Before we get on to West Ham, can we just like go back to La Liga and wrap that up?
Cause yeah, of course.
We're jumping all over the place. We're like jet setting all around.
You give me a theme and I go wild. That's my problem.
Teams who have unfortunately unclicked or ungrooved. Huesca finally lost.
Oh,
first defeat of the season, unfortunately. Barca are top after going behind again to Real Sociedad.
So they've been behind in every game.
I think they've been behind in every game this season.
Can I just have a quick word?
Narrow win though, right? 2-1.
2-1, yeah. And actually, Sociedad could have got a point quite easily.
Can I just throw this in? Sorry to, because I know that Barcelona fans, you know, will be listening in every now and again to this. Barcelona Twitter, for those of you who don't use Twitter, is absolutely hilarious because it seems to be in a state of perpetual crisis. And Sociedad are a very, very difficult club historically for Barca. But Valverde's record against them is outstanding. And what I love about that is it shows Ernesto Valverde's ability to find solutions, to grind results out. And, you know, Barcelona may not have their fifth gear that often, but their third gear, and they've made a lot of big money signings, that's fair, is extremely good. Their resilience under pressure. Dembele's been fantastic at crucial moments this season. Mm-hmm. Coutinho's looked good. Suarez was good the other day. So let's give him credit. And, you know, in games where Messi is finding it tough against, you know, a deep line defence, other players are stepping up. And I think that's really significant for them this year.
This is what I'm talking about with regeneration. I mean, it's not that long ago that Barca lost Neymar. And to most clubs, that would be a huge blow that would take years to recover from. Look at Liverpool when they lost Suarez, Spurs when they lost Bale. But Barca, it's almost like he's well, so what?
Right.
I think also, you know, they've lost Iniesta, who wasn't playing as regularly last season as he has been. He wasn't as integral to the starting 11, but that is a huge person in the dressing room and someone who's been there for a long, long time. And, you know, they've brought in a few new players this season. They brought in Vidal, they've brought in Artur, and they've brought in, who else did they bring in? They brought in another guy, and they've let a couple of people go as
Malcolm
well.
Malcolm came.
Malcolm.
That's it, yeah.
And, I mean, they had the big win against Huesca. They've not really hit their groove yet, but I think that if they keep, at this point of the season, if Valverde keeps them ticking over, winning games, and then they're going to, I don't think he knows his best 11 yet. And, you know, Sociedad away isn't a, you know, walk in the park. And they've got this new, they've rejigged the stadium, which has added such a huge amount of atmosphere.
You were saying that they've dug down to...
Yeah, so they've brought in, I mean, they had a big running track around and the atmosphere wasn't good for that, as with any kind of running track stadium. And they've dug down so that the stands are much closer to the pitch. They finished three sides and they're finishing the one end behind the goal, but it adds so much to it, and it looks like a brand new stadium. I'm not really that worried about Barca. I think they'll be fine. I just think they need to play themselves into proper form, you know.
And they lost Paulinho as well, remember?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And he was, you know, no one really expected him to have the impact that he did last season.
No, and he popped up with some really important goals last season, and he actually brought a really, you know, a very different element to that Barcelona midfield last season. And I think, like I said, I think it's going to take time to find their groove in terms of like real balance this season.
But I think their signings have been clever, because someone like Vidal, he's used to playing in elite teams with elite coaches. And I think he's the kind of guy who can hit the ground running. He's not one for the long term, but for the next couple of years, I think he'll be just fine there.
What's funny is when Vidal was signed, the reaction was in some sense similar to when Paulinho was signed. This is not a Barcelona player. I think that's absolutely the point. There are times you need to put, you know, the cliche bit of grit in the oyster. You need that, because if people set up against you a certain way and they know how to predict you, like teams sit deep, they know they'll try and pass through you. But if you've got, let's be brutal, a battering ram like Vidal or someone like Paulinho that will run beyond you, that won't wait for you to play, you know, three touches, whatever. He'll just charge down the middle. You need that kind of player to disrupt what other teams are doing.
Mm. Yeah, and they brought two young midfielders as well, which makes the Vidal signing so clever, I think, because, you know, he's the kind of player that will really, really benefit those people, you know, and someone who's played, you know, with so many great players in his career in three different leagues, or four different leagues even he played.
We forget, actually, that you sign players not just to play, but for the training ground. Mm. And Vidal will give players and in training different types of challenges.
Yeah,
and that's essential as well.
That's what the Ibrahimovic signing at Man United was so good. You know, even though they only really got like a season and a half out of him, really. But having him around for those young players, for like Lingard and Rashford and when Pogba came in, that was absolutely massive. And it was just, you know, beyond what he could have done on the pitch.
Talking of, I mean, sorry to jump across on this. It's me. Sorry. I apologize to listeners. It's me this week that's getting travel happy. So I've dragged us to Spain. Now I'm dragging us to Italy because I want to talk about someone else who was not only a huge dressing room presence, but who has now started scoring for his new club, Juventus, and that's Cristiano Ronaldo.
Mm. He's off the mark with a one-yard volley.
And the second goal...
Oh, that was,
goal
nice.
Was brilliant.
Yeah. Listen, hey, the second goal was interesting because, you know, Ronaldo, he scored twice against Sassuolo, a 2-1 win. First goal, you know, poacher from close range. The second goal, beat his man for speed.
Vintage Ronaldo.
And then, you know, peeled away and then, like, left for finish across the keeper.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, okay, this man is in the groove. And the way they celebrated with him is interesting because obviously he's someone who they have a lot of faith in. He's someone who they know needs to be loved. So the entire team piled on for the goal. And of course, the pressure. He's clearly someone who demands a lot of himself in training. And yeah, they're up and running.
Yeah, but also I think that, you know, they let Higuain go, who scored a lot of goals for them. So from a purely football point of view, they really need him to start scoring, you know. So I think it's a little bit more than just... oh yeah, isn't it great that Cristiano scored? It's like, actually, they need those goals.
Right, right, for sure.
I think people maybe underappreciate just how good Higuain has been the last few seasons for Napoli and for Juve. I'm actually really into this Juve team. I think they're
Chesney in goal.
Take my money. Take all my money, you know. But yeah, the only downside, obviously, on from the Juve Sassuolo game was the Douglas Costa.
Oh, man. That was
which
ugly.
Was pretty grim, yes. Actually.
He spat in his mouth?
Yeah, what happened was they'd been kind of, it was him and I think it was Di Francesco.
They'd been going at it.
They'd been going at it. And Di Francesco, I think, had crossed the ball in for the Sassuolo goal. And I think Costa had left one on him a little bit and Di Francesco got back up. And Costa actually could have been sent off for what he did before the spitting thing, which was kind of threw an elbow up.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't just a nudge. It was a bit of a swing. Mm. And then they kind of started having words. And then from pretty much point blank range, he just spat in the guy's face.
Yes, gross.
And the ref didn't actually see it initially, booked him. And I think it was a VAR thing that then got him sent off.
He could have a lengthy ban for that.
Yeah, and he released this. Did you see his apology that he released? Mm. So he released an apology on Instagram, which basically apologized to everyone apart from Di Francesco. So he apologized to the fans, the players, and yada, yada, yada. But I don't think he actually mentioned the player in question. The only thing I thought at the time was that it was such an extreme reaction that I wonder if Di Francesco said something. You know, when you just see a player kind of like go, well, you know, I wonder, I'd be interested to hear if anything more comes out about what was said.
Yeah,
I'm always interested. Actually, it's funny to say, I'm always interested in players that snap on pitches because so much is said. We even at the level we played at, people are always talking, always going at it. So for a professional player that's come through their entire career to go off like that in a moment and jeopardize so much, it's always interesting to analyze. I mean, and Douglas Costa isn't not the most volatile of characters, is he? I don't recall him being particularly.
He's not the most zen either, though, to be fair.
Well, it's funny because the inconsistent winger has really been shown up in previous years because you had players like, obviously, Bale, you know, when he was a winger, just delivering every single week, and Luis Figo. He's a kind of throwback, Douglas Costa, to the times when you could only really rely on a winger one game in three. Mm. You know, Savicevic was like that to an extent when he played as a wide forward. Savicevic would disappear for like months at a time and then turn up in May and then just win everything.
But just to return to the sunnier side of that game, I want to ask you guys about Ronaldo. I mean, he's 33 now.
Right.
Not sure how
just
long.
Just in his prime.
Is it two-year deal?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years. I mean, do you guys think that he can stay at this level? Because for me, he looks as good as ever.
I think it was a very, very smart move. to go to Juve. There were very few clubs that I think he could have gone to. I think now it becomes a little bit more of like stat stuff with Ronaldo. It's like keeping up that goal scoring record.
Yeah.
And I think maybe PSG was another club that he could have gone to.
Mm.
And the gap between them and the rest of the league is
Ronaldo, Neymar, and Mbappe.
Who would have taken? Who takes the penalties?
You need three footballs.
Cavani.
You need three penalties.
Yeah. You need three footballs. But I would say with Ronaldo at Juve, I think it's perfect because, you know, Serie A is still a competitive league.
Yeah. Mm.
It's still a competitive league. Juventus are a great team. There's a good mix of youth and experience. Older heads like Blaise Matuidi, who I love very much, and the younger generation. Players like Pjanic as well. And what's really exciting is they'll put together a really strong Champions League campaign again.
Mm.
It's such a great platform for it because he can enjoy his games in the weekend. I don't think he'd have enjoyed PSG much because Ronaldo is a fantastic player. And if he'd wanted to just go and score a sackful at a club which is uncompetitive, he would have gone anywhere. He could have gone to China or wherever. But
he's undoubtedly the main man at Juve as well. And I think that, as you've seen with Neymar, who moved to PSG to be the name, we've covered this a million times.
But I want to respect Ronaldo for challenging himself because it is a big move for him. He has done something a bit brave. Mm. You know, it's like when you've sacked off a major rock band and started a new project by yourself. Like he's done that. He hasn't rested on his laurels.
And he really could have stayed at Real. There was no real, I mean, I think it was probably a relationship point, which is why he eventually left. And like when Sid was on the podcast, Sid Lowe, and he was saying that, you know, I don't think he ever felt massively loved at Real. Whereas when he scored that goal against Juve and they applauded him, he was, and Sid said, I wonder if this means he's going to go to
Juve. It seemed like that was a big moment for him.
Should we take a quick break and then come back?
Yeah, why not? Why not? It seems the mighty have fallen this week. Watford have lost their unbeaten record.
Oh, don't.
Well, listen, Watford been terrific so far this year and lost United 2-1, Manchester United 2-1. Troy Deeney had a surprisingly quiet game, given his physical strength and given the fact that he is often very vocal about the weakness of some of his opponents. But Chris Smalling handled him really well and scored a fantastic goal. Marouane Fellaini continuing his fine form from the World Cup. You know, Marouane Fellaini is a player I compared to Ambrosini from AC Milan a few years ago and was widely mocked for that comparison. But I think it's a comparison that's standing
up.
I think actually, hey, look, Fellaini's performance against Brazil and Fellaini's performance against Watford, screening the back four, clean, simple distribution, not particularly imaginative, but, you know, effective. And arguably, alongside David De Gea, United star player.
And he made a crucial contribution from a set piece.
Yeah.
Which Ryan has suggested has been stolen from Cardiff.
Yeah, Man United are stealing Cardiff set pieces. I've got a problem with this. Neil Warnock is not being acknowledged as the tactical playmaking coach.
Can I just apologise to Neil Warnock for this act of culture appropriation? We're sorry that we've stolen your routine also.
He probably wouldn't mind. He'd be flattered. But I thought this game was like a tale of two Uniteds. It was like first half, old United, get the job done, 2-0 up, no fuss, away at Watford. Second half was very much new United.
Yeah.
And Watford very, very easily could have got a point.
Right.
And they were really under the cosh second half United, actually. Like I thought it was a really fun game as a neutral. It was a very entertaining game. It was kind of crazy. Mm. And there seemed to be a lot. United were just getting the ball away at points because they were under quite a lot of pressure. Mm. Watford were keeping the ball a lot around United's outside United's box.
Do you think Mourinho has reacted to the criticism that he came under after the defeat to Spurs? I mean, we talk about old United, new United. Do you think he's really going to change his methods?
I don't think Mourinho gives enough of a whatever to let criticism change his approach, but I think it maybe hurts him on a personal level more than he lets on.
But you look at the best coaches and they adapt over time. You know, they see the game moving forward, they realize their way of thinking is outdated and they change it. And I think Mourinho, I mean, we dedicated a whole podcast to him recently, but I think he is in danger of being caught out a little bit.
Yeah, but they've responded really well from the Tottenham defeat. You know, two tricky away games and, you know, come out with two wins. And
exactly, and this is what I mean. I feel like something changed.
Yeah. I think he's returned to established methods. So if you look at the two wins, Burnley were not the best, but he, you know, played through them pretty well. The win against Watford, the football was not especially fluid. The goals came from set piece situations. United's build up play is still extremely slow, and that is a problem. Unfortunately, Nemanja Matic and Marouane Fellaini in the same midfield gives you a certain degree of control, solidity, whatever you call it, resilience, but it doesn't give much in terms of imagination. Pogba, unfortunately, I awarded a 7 out of 10 of my match ratings only because I feel like at his best he was transcendent, but at his worst, when United needed match control in the second half, he let the game slip, and I gave him a 7 overall. That makes sense. I mean, I loved some of his long passing. I mean, Pogba's vision is extraordinary.
Sorry to cut in, I should clarify, that's probably because I'm not a Man United fan and I was just enjoying the whole spectacle of what was going on. But, and I definitely acknowledge that he probably wasn't anywhere near as good as I thought he was. You know?
United's biggest concern must be Alexis Sanchez, not because the fact that he's not playing really well, which is a problem, but of what he represents. He represents the fact that he's a player in whom substantial amount has been invested and looks to be not only far off the pace, but out of sync with what they're doing. And if you look at Sarri and Klopp and Guardiola, the most harsh indictment of Mourinho at the moment is that all the players they've bought have become significantly better and integrated, and Sanchez looks out on a limb, and it's not quite clear at this point exactly why he was acquired.
I think I would probably sympathise a little bit with Mourinho here, though, because I think Sanchez is quite a hard guy to coach. He's very instinctive, and he doesn't really seem to click within an organised attacking structure. But saying that, I don't think United really have that at the moment, not into the same level that Liverpool do and Manchester City do. There was a lot of problems when he was at Arsenal in terms of he would stifle a lot of the attacking fluidity. But then at the same time, he would pop up with really important goals, get them out of jail quite a lot, and he would basically do nothing for the rest of the game, but then he'll pop up with a really important assist. And actually, it was kind of similar at Barcelona. I think that he was more of the kind of joker in that system.
I actually would give Guardiola more credit for that, because Guardiola had him as a defensive number 9, so he gave him a fixed point, and that was brilliant, because you had, with him as the fixed 9, he had a defined responsibility. So Guardiola actually was counterintuitive and said, you're going to play through the middle, this is your role, people move off you. And actually the reason why that didn't quite work at Barca was because his finishing was bad. That's the thing. The only thing that stopped Alexis Sanchez from being a truly outstanding player for Barcelona for several years was the finishing. That's almost a tragedy. You know, and Barcelona, actually, this is a separate point, haven't had, you know, a truly great 9 since Villa, who was even a wide forward. Anyway, but on another tack, because I don't want to keep too United focused in this podcast, I'm going to jump across the city again to Manchester City, because we're in danger, I think, because they're so brilliant, of overlooking them. And they look pretty fearsome for certain periods against Fulham, who are a good side, but they kind of blew them away.
Mm. Sterling looked back to his best. Bernardo Silva, I mean, he's such an impressive player. He was so crucial to Monaco on their amazing run. And there's a sense that City are just kind of, they know how to do this, you know? They've been there before. Whereas Liverpool, they're probably their biggest rivals this year. There's still that feeling that they're getting there. City are there. They know who they are.
Yeah, I still think City are the team.
Yeah, they've got to be the team to do.
There's too much intelligence in that team and there's too much technical ability.
Yeah, perhaps City's or Guardiola's biggest issue is going to be getting all of those attacking midfielders game time, you know, Mahrez, for example. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it's not good to have a player as talented as Mahrez sitting on the bench during away.
Well, I think like Champions League starts this week, and I think the group games for them will be prime time to rotate.
And also, here's the thing, don't forget how long Bernardo Silva had to bide his time last season. You know, he spent a lot of time on the bench, Gundogan sitting, waiting the wings. I just think with City, Guardiola has got them all to buy into the collective. You know, Sané came in, scores the opening goal after all the criticism he's received, made a great run for that finish. And, you know, they're just interchangeable at this point. The thing with City is this title race will come down to the decisive big clashes because, frankly, a team that creates as many chances as they do, and not just chances, but high quality chances. I mean, like driven across a 6-yard box, cut back. A team that does that often is not going to drop many points.
I think it will come down to those big clashes, but this is where I think Liverpool might have the edge, because Klopp knows how to beat Guardiola. He did it in Germany. And I mean, last season's Champions League games were classics. And there's only one coach in world football that gets under Guardiola's skin. Klopp knows how to do it.
Can I give a shout to West Ham, by the way, before we begin to wrap up? Only because they've had a really tough time of things, and it's always nice to celebrate positives when you get a chance. And I'm just really happy to see West Ham getting that win with, you know, three lovely goals, actually, against Everton.
Yeah. I mean, money doesn't always buy you happiness, and West Ham has spent 100 million, but it's who you buy. I'm not sure their recruitment was the best, but they are starting to click. And yeah, we mentioned Yarmolenko earlier. I thought he was excellent in that game. If it wasn't for the rise of Jadon Sancho at Dortmund, I think they would have kept hold of Yarmolenko, because he was impressive for them last year, certainly in the first half of last season.
Mm. Actually, he got another assist on the weekend.
Sancho, yeah, he did. And he's getting better every week.
He made a real impact when he came on.
I feel like I sing his praises every week, but there's good reason. I mean, he's gone to Dortmund, he's taken a big risk, and he came off the bench, and at a time when the game was... Dortmund were drawing 1-1 with Frankfurt at the time, and he a fantastic piece of skill to just create some space and perfect cross to the far post.
Yeah, it was great.
And Wolf... scored, and that was a crucial goal in that game. And Sancho, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a little bit of Raheem Sterling about the way he plays, but I think Sancho has more end product to his game than Sterling did at his age. And yeah, I'm, as an Englishman, quite excited by what he's doing.
Paco scored on his debut as well for Dortmund, came off the bench.
Pac-Man.
Yeah.
A really, really good player, actually.
Yeah. He seems to be a popular guy there already. I think that's going to be a really good signing. And actually, all elsewhere in Germany, Reece Nelson got a goal on his debut for Hoffenheim.
A lovely goal it was too.
To equalise in the, 87th minute, and then they still managed to lose to Fortuna Düsseldorf.
Yeah, his first two touches in the Bundesliga, and the second one was a goal, on loan from Arsenal, of course. Yeah, it's good to see young English players going over to Germany and getting that game time, and I think we're going to see that trend continue.
Can I just say, shout out again to a man who's been in the groove for many, many years, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. 500 goals now. And scoring it, what was this, a flying karate kick?
It was a roundhouse, right?
Yeah, roundhouse kick. Yeah, extraordinary, yeah.
Yeah, he's joining an exclusive club there.
Who else is in it?
Ronaldo, Messi.
Of active players.
Is that active players to score 500 goals.
That's it though, right?
That's it.
That's a hell of an achievement, because let's not forget that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has played for parts of his career as almost a kind of withdrawn nine. So when he was at Juve, for example, was really a point man and wasn't getting... the three balls back, when he still had a lot of pace, was being used almost as a kind of pivot man to feed on rushing strikers. So that's a big achievement.
What are you looking forward to this week, guys, before we go?
I'm just enjoying the 3 points, to be honest. I don't look any further ahead these days.
Musa hasn't taken his sunglasses off since Saturday evening.
PSG versus Liverpool, or Liverpool versus PSG.
Yes.
Obviously, all the talent on the pitch, but Klopp versus Thomas Tuchel, I think is really... it's really interesting.
And Mbappe versus the new Varane.
Yeah. I think I may have made that comparison a week too early.
Can I just say, I really like that comparison, because can I say on this podcast, one thing I love about it is the way that you can look at players who are doing great stuff now, but the ones who are coming through. And I think it's really important to look at the next generation of who's coming through. So Mbappe, Gomez.
You're not saying they're the same level yet, just to clarify, because, you know.
Why not? Let's go for it.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely not. Just to go back to Klopp versus Tuchel, I mean, Tuchel actually had a better record at Dortmund than Klopp did. I mean, Klopp joined under different circumstances, had to rescue the team and bring them back to where they should be. But Tuchel, perhaps an underrated coach. And I think bringing those two together again, I mean, of course, they met each other when Liverpool, last time was when Liverpool played Dortmund, that amazing 4-3 game in the Europa League. Mm. Klopp won that time round, but it could be really interesting this time.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think that's going to be the pick of the week, that one.
Yeah.
That you too, Ryan?
I'm on board.
Well, team, it's been an absolute pleasure once again. Thank you so much for discussing who's in the groove and who's not. Thank you so much to listening to our podcast once again, all you listeners out there. You can find us on all social media platforms at Rob on a Mag. Check us out on Acast as well, and we'll see you again next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.